This is The Morning Shift. I'm Jen White. Silky Nutmeg Ganache. She's one of the contestants on this season's RuPaul's Drag Race. She's also a Chicagoan. She's got a master's degree, and she's body positive.
Growing up, I had to be my very own cheerleader. I didn't have people rooting me on. I only had people telling me, you need to lose weight.
Our conversation with Silky is coming up in a bit. But first, there have been 51 murders of mostly black women in Chicago over the last 20 years. Last week, we talked to an expert who believes all the evidence points to a serial killer or killers.
Eric Witzig, a member of our board who used to hunt serial killers for a living with the FBI, he believes this series could be the work of primarily one person. That is possible. The MO is really very, very similar.
And we spoke with community activists who have been trying to convince the police that the crimes are related.
If this was happening in any other place on the north side or in one of those suburbs, and it was people of another color, there would be dragnets. We would have 24-hour round-the-clock media on it because it's unacceptable.
Today, we're with State Representative Patricia Van Pelt. She represents Illinois' 5th District. Her district includes Chicago's West Side, where 14 of the 51 victims lived. She's concerned by a number of things that have to do with these cases, but she's most frustrated by the attitude of law enforcement.
A year ago, we came to them about this, trying to see if there was a serial murderer in our area. They said there's no evidence for it. And then we find later that more and more are killed, and then we learned about the Murder Accountability Project, and it just opened up from there.
Well, we had longtime North Lawndale community organizer Reverend Robin Hood, who you mentioned, on the show last week, and he first became aware of this pattern of murders back in 2007. And here's what he's had to say about the overall police responses as the years have gone on.
Law enforcement, if I was to give it a number from 1 to 10, I would give them a minus 1. They have been terrible on this issue to me.
It sounds like you're also dissatisfied with CPD's response. Why do you feel, or what do you feel has held back their investigation of these murders?
Well, a lot of people say that it's because of the communities that these women are found in and the circumstances. But regardless of the circumstances or community, they owe us a responsibility. They have the responsibility to make us aware of challenges that's going on in the community and also to investigate. And that's all we're asking is for investigation. And what they're doing is constantly saying that we don't see any evidence of a serial killer. Well, I'd like to know what they're using for evidence.
Last week, we spoke to, again, both the Murder Accountability Project and organizers about this story. And at the time, CPD told us that 6 detectives who are also sworn with the FBI are combing back through DNA evidence for all 51 cases. They're working on the project part time. And Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson also had this to say last month before the effort got started.
There's just simply nothing there right now that suggests that we have serial killers in the city of Chicago.
He made those comments to CBS 2's Pam Zekman, who's done a series of reports on these murders. And a CPD spokesperson reiterated that to WBEZ, they still have no evidence to support a serial killer. In your opinion, is this investigation robust enough?
No, it's not. In fact, I've held several public hearings, well, actually 2 public hearings about the DNA backlog. We have 750 murders in Chicago that we have DNA evidence for and have not been analyzed going back to 2014. So I'm wondering what they're using to determine whether this is a serial killer or not. What are they using? Because the DNA is backlogged.
CPD does say they have DNA for some of the murders. And as you said, you've been raising concerns about a DNA backlog in Illinois. Talk about the work you're doing there.
Well, first of all, when we learned about the DNA backlog, we realized that there was like 13,000 cases that they had information on, DNA evidence on, but we had 757 murders in Chicagoland only that had not been analyzed. That tells me that there could be, you know, hundreds of people walking around who are murderers who feel like they got away with murder. We have to dig into that DNA. And we brought in a company called Andy that does DNA a rapid analysis. They can analyze DNA in 94 minutes. So I'm not sure why we're waiting. I'm really pushing for some significant change in that area.
Do you think this is an issue of a lack of resources for CPD?
Well, it's not CPD. It's the Illinois State Police that actually does the DNA analysis. It's in the Chicago Crime Lab. But the state police is the ones that's responsible for it. And that's the reason why I've been holding public hearings about it. Because we cannot resolve, the CPD cannot resolve murder cases when we have DNA analysis information and not having and not analyzing that data.
So do additional resources need to be given to the Illinois State Police to try to handle this backlog?
That's the exact question I asked Jen. They said no. They said they had everything they needed. So we want results now.
So if they have everything they needed, what's the explanation for the backlog?
Well, they said the change in administration has helped to open some doors and to some finances that they weren't didn't have before. So we're looking forward to that. I told them in 6 months, we're coming back and have another hearing. And I want to see some significant changes, not 100 less, you know, cases, 200 less cases. We need to wipe out that backlog, especially if we can do it in 94 minutes per case.
Now, unsolved murders are never a good thing. And whether these 51 murders are the action of a serial killer or serial killers or just even 51 different murders, this has to weigh heavily on the families of these victims and the community as a whole. What are you hearing from community members?
Well, I'm hearing from a couple of the mothers that have daughters that were found murdered, and they're waiting for the police to give them some information about what happened, how it happened. And they're just concerned that over in Crystal Lake that, you know, a young boy was killed and they found him in 5 days. And here we are, have women that have been missing for long periods of time, even those that they found, they haven't been able to figure out who's responsible. They've already charged the parents on that young boy's murder. So why aren't we getting charges now on these cases? There could be 51 different murderers, which would be even more horrific than having a few serial killers. But we need to get to the bottom of it.
You recently took part in a community event where a group of people recited prayers and said the names of the victims out loud. Why was it important for you to be present at that event?
Well, Dr. Beverly Reed Scott is the one who pulled that together from the Soul Garden. And it was important because those women's names have not been mentioned in a long time. And so all of us wanted to call their names out one by one because they are important. They are our sisters. They are our aunties. They are my mothers. They are cousins. They are family members of all the people in this city, and we need to respond to their murders.
And speaking to Reverend Hood and other activists we had on the show last week, they expressed that this was not something new to the community. The community knew about these murders, and the concern was there for a long time, and that there's a lot of fear around the safety of women who live in these neighborhoods. What kind of impact does that fear have on the people you serve?
It stops them from being able to move about, to live, to be able to experience the best things in this community. They can't even come out. They're afraid to come out. And I don't blame them, because anytime the police are ready, willing to just sweep it under the rug, all these murders under the rug as if, oh, there's nothing going on here, and then tell us, oh, it's okay, you know, nothing's happening, it's no serial murder. And we know without a shadow of a doubt that something is going on. And when the people that are in charge, who are supposed to be protecting you, serving and protecting you, are not doing their job, you have a reason to be afraid.
How much weight can you bring to bear as a state senator on law enforcement officials if you feel things aren't moving quickly enough?
Well, on the state police, I'm responsible on the state level, so we can definitely call them in for meetings and have them come in and give us clear testimonies about what's going on and how they're moving forward. But this is bigger than the state police. It involves a lot of people, and I really believe we need an executive order from the governor to bring all the parties together, the Chicago police, the state police, the state's attorneys, the public defenders. Everybody needs to come together and deal with this problem we have in the backlog, because it's not just from the state police holding it back. Is other parties as well.
Alderman Pat Dowell, who represents the 3rd Ward on the South Side, says she wants to do hearings on these possible serial killings as well. What's the next step for you?
The next step for me is to make sure that the state police are getting that information. That's why I actually paid out of my pocket to bring in Mr. Hargrove from Murder Accountability Project. I paid for that, to fly him in, because I needed to put some fire under these people. And I figured that with his testimony about what's happening and all the algorithms he has about the murders, that this would put fire underneath them.
What do you say to families who have been waiting for answers for 2 decades? As we said, these murders started back in 2001.
Two things. One, support Pat Dowell in those meetings by calling your own alderman and letting him or her know that you are interested in this backlog information and you want to see answers. And if you also call your state senators and your state representatives to say, we want the DNA backlog resolved and we need you to put it on the front burner.
That's Democratic State Senator Patricia Van Pelt. She represents Illinois' 5th District on the West Side. Senator, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you, Jen.
One of this year's contestants on RuPaul's Drag Race hails from Chicago.
Silky is your cousin, your best friend. You know, that shoulder to lean on when you're going through something. Silky is just a down-to-earth girl.
That's Silky Nutmeg Ganache. She calls herself a big girl who's completely comfortable with her body. She also has a master's degree in organizational leadership and plans on pursuing a PhD in global leadership. But for all the attention she's getting now, drag wasn't exactly a calling.
To be honest, I never wanted to do drag, ever. I think that God put us in places that we needed to be. Especially with me being on RuPaul's Drag Race right now, for someone that represents body positivity, someone that represents black excellence, someone that represents education, I think God placed me where I really needed to be and to have the platform that I have today.
Has that changed at all? Were you enjoying it now?
I do enjoy it now. Mm-hmm. I think when I was there to compete, that's when I got hooked on it. Uh-huh. I love the competitive side. You know, going into interview, and then after interview, evening gown, swimsuit, you know, talent portion, you know. I got hooked on all the different categories. Yeah. And that's what got me so excited about drag, the pageantry.
Well, the body positivity part of your platform and your character, it's very central to who you are. Talk about why that's so important.
It's so important because growing up, I had to be my very own cheerleader. I didn't have people rooting me on. I only had people telling me, you need to lose weight, or you need to do this, you need to do that. Where the reality of it is, you need to mind your own business. it's kind of like how the Christian church is at times, you know, pointing out everybody else's flaws when in reality your household is not fit. And I feel like growing up as a kid, that's how it was. You know, I was fat. But yes, I may be fat, but I'm also smart. I'm also very active. I played football growing up, soccer growing up. I was in the band growing up. You know, so I was very active. Thank God, knock on wood, I don't have high blood pressure, cholesterol, or diabetes or anything. And I make sure that I stay active, especially as I get older, to make sure that none of that, you know, knocks on my front door. But I was born and raised in Moss Point, Mississippi. And it's just the Southern way of life, you know. Southern people are fat. We like to eat. I don't discriminate against any food. I don't have any food allergies. Well, I have one, but I don't even like to think about it. Because I'm still going to eat it if I want it.
You be careful. Be careful.
Very.
Where'd you come up with the name Silky Nutmeg Ganache? What's the root of that?
When RuPaul Drag Race started in 2008, I was a freshman in college. And one of our mentors, our gay mentors, had decided one day he was going to get all of us. And we were going to come up with drag names. And he came up with the drag name Lasagna Frozen for me. And then a few years later, when I got older, he took me out to a bar and we was having cocktails and dancing, and he saw me develop as an individual, and he said to me, your name is going to be Silky. If you ever do drag, your name will be Silky, because you're sometimes ghetto, but you're always classy. And literally that night, I watched Food Network quite often. That night, someone said Silky Ganache, and I said, that's the name, Silky Ganache. And then I later added in nutmeg. Mm-hmm. That's how I became Silky Nutmeg Ganache.
What was your reaction when you found out you'd be competing on RuPaul's Drag Race?
I was really shocked. You have people like Nina West, who's auditioned every year. This was my first year auditioning, and I never could have imagined getting on the show. I was like, you know, I put in my audition tape now, you know, 2 or 3 years, you know, they'll actually notice me and, you know, put me on the show. And I was just so gagged and excited that I can actually show my talents. I'm very, very, very talented. I may be loud and obnoxious on the show, but you just cannot take away my talent. And I'm so glad and humbled that I'm able to show that in front of millions of people around the world.
So for people who aren't familiar with the show, there's a series of challenges on every episode, from doing a photo shoot, a runway walk, designing a new look. What challenge has been the hardest so far?
All of them. Keeping my sanity. That's a challenge. Each and every day that we filmed, that was the challenge. But I think on the show, the hardest for me was always the design challenges. Mm-hmm. I know how to sew, but when it comes to having a vision of a design and, you know, to prepare something within 4 to 5 hours that you're going to have to put on the runway, that was just not my best suit. And in addition to that, on the show, when they give you fabric, they give you a yard and a half of fabric. So, you know, my body, a yard and a half just covers the front, you know?
So what do you do? What's the fix?
You try to make it work. Like, if you notice on the show, I was always frustrated by it, like not having enough fabric. And I know a lot of the other girls commented, that's enough fabric, but that's enough fabric for you when you're a size 2. And women clothing, I'm a size 28. You know, and so it takes 6 yards for me to make a gown.
Well, part of the show is reading other contestants, which for those who don't know means, I guess, like telling the truth very bluntly to people about themselves. But I'm curious about behind the scenes, what the environment is like. Is there a lot of support for fellow contestants?
It depends on who you are. Hmm. I had support. I kind of made alliance with Akiria Chanel Davenport from Dallas, Texas, and Vanessa Vanji Mateo from Los Angeles. And we call ourselves the Dream Girls. And I think we were there for emotional support. They always told the truth. And with me, I was always my biggest critic on the show. And they always were there to just encourage and to lift me up. And I'm so grateful for them.
Considering you started drag kind of reluctantly, I'm curious about what you've learned about yourself over the course of this competition and as you continue down this path.
That it's okay to be vulnerable. Hmm. I didn't show that on the show at all. And I don't really regret anything. But if I had to do it all over again, I would soften up a little bit. I think a lot of the fights that I got into was mainly because I was a little stubborn. When people have opinions about you doing drag and other things in life, especially being a person of color, I got to see where your critique's coming from, where your heart is. And instead of seeing the critiques or, you know, accepting the critiques, I was trying to figure out where your heart was in the critiques before I can even acknowledge your critique. And so I just wish that I was a little bit more vulnerable.
Well, you've got a master's degree in mm-hmm. organizational leadership. You're working on a PhD. Talk about what's next for you.
I have a lot of things coming out this summer. Mm-hmm. There's a couple other shows that I filmed already that you'll get to see me on. I'm working on an endorsement deal with a clothing line that's well known and a clothing line that I love. And so hopefully everything will go through with that. One of the things that I'm working on right now, my grandmother, Teresa Cooper, in Mississippi, is 81 years old and still teaching each and every day.
Wow.
And she truly believed in education. And so I'm starting the Teresa Cooper Scholarship. Well, hopefully this September, my goal is to give out $5,000 scholarships. So if anybody out there would like to contribute, I would greatly appreciate it. But I will have like merchandising coming out to support that as well.
That's Silky Nutmeg Ganache. She's a contestant on RuPaul's Drag Race. You can see the show on Netflix or on Logo TV and VH1. Silky, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. Please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a rating. It helps other people find us. I'm Jen White. Let's talk again soon.